Welcome to the Persona Tech Podcast, where we are interviewing the interviewers. We go through the top questions on Persona, and this week we have Carl from Voice Tech Podcast. Carl, welcome to the show.
Chad, thanks very much for having me on. My name's Carl Robinson. I am the host of the Voice Tech Podcast. We've interviewed more than 80 fantastic voice tech experts in the field of voice interfaces, NLU, voice AI, smart speakers, anything to do with talking to machines and getting a response back. I've interviewed somebody in that field. I'm also the CEO and co-founder of a new company called Rumble Studio, which is a tool that allows you to asynchronously record podcast audio or any kind of audio that you might want, perhaps for content marketing or for other purposes. And we're just launching our beta version right now. I'd be happy to talk about that as well.
We'll get to that in just a minute. I have a more pressing question, which is bacon, eggs, or waffles?
Bacon, eggs, or waffles. Okay, so for me, that's an easy one. Eggs all the way. I'm on a healthy tip right now, new year, you know, new me. And I'm a big fan of eggs. They're healthy, full of protein. I eat them every day. It's all about eggs. I do love bacon, nothing against bacon. But for me, it's kind of an occasional treat. You know, if you're eating bacon every day, then you've got to fix something. That's not right.
And how do you like your eggs?
I like them anyway, scrambled, fried. I boil them in the morning because I've got this kind of like little egg cooker that just does it super convenient, like an egg toaster, whatever.
By voice.
Yeah, by voice. In fact, that could be the next project. Yeah.
There you go. Boil my egg.
Give me some
egg boiler. Boil my egg.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. I would actually, let's hear a little bit more about Rumble Studio. I'm super intrigued.
Yeah, definitely. So Rumble Studio came from a pain point that I had being a podcaster on the Voice Tech Podcast. I started Voice Tech Podcast as a hobby and as a way to promote myself in the voice technology world. I have an excuse to talk to interesting people while I was doing my data science master's. So it's a chance for me to like escape the bubble of the laboratory that I was in doing my internship. But I quickly realized just how much work it is to create audio content, as I'm sure you well know. It really is a lot more work than it might look on the face of it. And because I was working with voice technology and because I was interviewing people who were experts in that field, the thought occurred to me, oh, maybe we can use some of this fantastic technology to automate some of what I do, to reduce the workload and avoid me having to spend my entire weekend editing and doing all this crazy stuff that I would do. And so I looked online, had a good look for any kind of tool that could help automate some of the recording, maybe some of the editing, and I really couldn't find anything at the time. This was like 2018. That was a time before Descript existed and a lot of the tools that exist today. And so that's where the thought occurred to me. And then a few months went by and then I discovered Entrepreneur First, which is this startup accelerator that comes from the UK, but is now global. Got into the program, met my fantastic co-founder, Joris, and then we got together, discussed this idea, and we've actually made it a reality.
Cool. It's exciting. Yeah, the voice is a very interesting world, and I'm going to kind of segue that into one of the top questions on Persona right now, which is really around Clubhouse and kind of this idea of voice as a social platform. How do you see the Clubhouse product and platform kind of going in this like kind of live audio world?
Well, you know, I'm feeling the FOMO right now because I don't have an iPhone, so I get offers to invite me into the platform every day, and I haven't had a chance to use it yet. I've seen some stuff online. Obviously, I've got a rough idea how it works, but it's definitely the most successful example of social audio to date. I think it's fantastic that it's taking off. It's just another reason for us to get into voice, to get excited about voice technology and its different forms. And that crossover between voice and content as well is really, really exciting. You can see a lot more interest from investors, from just the general public. And it's not the only one. I should say there are a lot of social audio apps out there. There's Twitter Spaces as well, which is hot on the heels. And there are a lot of smaller ones as well, as you well know. There's, of course, Persona. I'm familiar with Limor, which I've been speaking with the founder of as well. And there's others too. So I think it's a general trend. You know, people are trying to crack the nut, the audio, you know, the Twitter for audio, essentially. Twitter is doing it, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be the ones that win at the end of the day. So yeah, really exciting times.
And how do you kind of think about, you made a comment around async, you know, versus sync. How do you feel like that kind of plays out in the audio space?
Well, I think they're just two completely different things. And people often see async as like an inferior cousin of the synchronous model. You know, that's a question I get all the time, and perhaps you do too. You know, they say, oh, but doesn't it lose the spontaneity of a live conversation? And to some extent, yes, like it is a different medium. It's the difference between, you know, having a telephone conversation and sending an email or having a chat over WhatsApp. There's synchronous, there's asynchronous, there's semi-synchronous. These are all completely different mediums, and everyone has its place and presents challenges, but also a number of new opportunities. And so I think asynchronous audio in a social context is new. People are still discovering how to use that, and Clubhouse is a great example. And there's all sorts of different Clubhouse conversations going on right now, presentations to the group, much more interactive ones where everyone's taking part. And I think the same thing will happen for asynchronous recording of content that's to be consumed offline, for example, podcasts. And so there are different ways that you can record these asynchronous conversations. You can go as simple as having a monologue that you piece together piece by piece, or you could have a one-to-one conversation that takes place over a number of days, or you could send one question out to 20 people and get all their answers back. Merge them all into a single conversation, perhaps add your comments and then publish that. So there's all sorts of different options, and we're right at the beginning. I think it's really for us to present the tools to the public to use, and then for them to figure out the best ways to use them.
Yeah, I 100% agree with your vision of that. And those are some of the things that we're obviously playing with Persona, but and predominantly on this question and answer space, and kind of aggregating into the best answers and kind of thinking about a little bit of the Quora model. But I don't think that necessarily has to be the broadest version of the product, but there's definitely an opportunity there in kind of thinking about those different formats. And I like those. I like the way that you broke up each one of those categories, because you can think about them as either use cases or actually entirely new products. And it's a fascinating sort of distinction. Indeed. So,
yeah.
So we're going to go to the second most popular question on Persona around podcasting, which is Apple is in talks with offering a podcasting subscription service. Mm. Do you think this is a good idea? And I think the follow-up question to that is how do you sort of think about, you know, this Patreon model for audio and kind of paying for it? And how do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a big question. I mean, I know there have been companies that have got into trouble before, but there was a company that tried to basically monetize other people's podcasts through an app, you know, through a slick app. They wanted to become the Netflix of podcasting. It didn't end well for them because there was a huge backlash. Podcasters, there's a certain expectation around podcast audio. When you put it out there, it's yours, it's copyright. And you want to retain ownership of that, and people don't like the idea of other people profiting from it. So I think if Apple do a subscription model, they have to be very careful about what content they put out there. But obviously there's a growing trend now for these big tech companies to produce their own content, like Netflix. They've got a lot of Netflix originals. And so if they're going down that route, then I think fantastic. I think the more content that we can get onto audio, the better. There's an insatiable demand for high quality content. But then I go back to my previous point that kind of content, which tends to be content that's designed for the masses, it's designed to have general appeal, to get huge download numbers, to warrant the huge amount of money that it takes to create that content. That is just one type of content. And I feel like podcasting, just like YouTube videos, just like blogging, it's a much more diverse ecosystem where different voices need to be represented, not just these, polished, glitzy voices that come from big tech and the content that they produce, but also just the grassroots kind of content. And so I think it will, it will add to the ecosystem, but it won't be the be all and end all. And I don't think people should be too worried about it.
Yeah, that's one thing I love about the podcasting space is sort of this hobbyist world. And I'm 34, so I'm starting to kind of get in this world where I remember building my own PCs. And, I think obviously the migration over to laptops, it became a much more skilled and integrated process. But this kind of PC era of building your own PC and the hobbyist world around that and the Radio Shacks and the Fries and buying all these different, pieces of equipment to build it. I miss that. And one thing I do love about the podcasting space is that it kind of feels like a really genuine hobbyist category that is really getting exciting and big. So it's awesome to get that feeling again.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. And it's true that as things become democratized, like, you know, going from a computer which you could program on. Like, I remember when I was a kid, the first computer I had was the ZX Spectrum, so I actually like learned to read on a computer that you could write basic programming on. And now, you know, kids grow up with an iPhone in their hand. You know, they're just tapping away on the latest game. There's not much thought that goes into that. I feel like there's less creativity, less problem solving, and I think that's something that's missing from the next generation.
Yeah, and I think one thing to give them credit for is they will be able to build in ways that I won't be able to wrap my head around. And I remember this, my cousin is 10 years older than me. He was into web development and he taught me a lot of my early kind of HTML, CSS stuff. And I remember him explaining to me like a web server and how the files were transferred and all these things. And I didn't understand because I just paid for a hosting provider and I just uploaded files in FTP. And I didn't understand what he meant of like, you know, having a Linux server and running. And so I was able to then just, you know, move on in that layer of abstraction. And I do wonder if this younger generation, they're going to miss a lot of sort of those kind of nuts and bolts. But will they be able to imagine a world where they just expect certain foundational technology providers? Yeah. Because they're like, of course there's an app store and of course there's a server. Like, they won't even think about those things, right? And so
that's it.
So you talked about a little bit in your intro around kind of voice computing, and specifically kind of Google Home, Alexa kind of came to my mind. And I'm just kind of curious, what is your perception of the progress that platforms like Alexa have had over the last, you know, year or two, especially compared to what it kind of felt like, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, where it was like, wow, this is absolutely the future and everyone has it. How do you kind of think about that transition from that hype phase to now the kind of integration in people's homes, and where do you think that's kind of headed?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, so I've been involved in it for about 3 years. So I joined kind of halfway through the hype phase, I would say. And there was a huge optimism. There was a fantastic supportive community. There still is. Nothing's changed on that front. I think the thing that's changed is people's perception of the apps or the skills that you can get on the big tech platforms, because that was, you know, the first use case. Smart speakers came out. It was the way that, you know, this technology entered the minds of the masses, essentially entered the homes of the masses. And everyone thought, you know, like, okay, this is it. It's just like a mobile phone. You install some apps and then you use them and then you get, you know, certain services delivered to you. But that hasn't panned out exactly the same way, of course. There's a lot, I believe there's a lot more stuff you can do on a mobile phone a lot more productively than you can currently do on a voice interface. It's still a bit of a novelty. There are certain niche cases or certain common use cases that work really well, like accessing content, for example. I use it all the time to ask for certain radio stations. Of course, you can set timers. You can use it for smart home devices to turn on the lights, etc. But beyond that, like the true killer app hasn't really emerged. In my opinion, the killer app is asking for music, essentially. It's just naming a song or asking for a radio station. It's just there. To me, that is 10 times better than having to search for it on a screen in any form. But, you know, because it's a voice interface, people have these very high expectations for it. It's like speaking to another person. So surely you should be able to ask, you know, of it the same level of services that you could ask of another human, right? A true voice assistant. But it's absolutely not the case. The AI that is behind the speech to text and the NLU, the natural language understanding, really just isn't there to be able to carry out complex tasks for you on your behalf. So I can't say to it, okay, can you go and just find me the best price for this new bike I want to buy, and then negotiate a great deal with the seller? Can you just do that for me and come back in a week and just let me know, or whatever? It can't do that. You have to give it very specific instructions. And what we found is the companies that do best with voice interfaces right now are the ones that actually train domain-specific natural language understanding models for certain types of audio data, for certain vocabularies in certain professional domains or consumer domains, with very specific tasks in mind. And those work a lot better. It's just a characteristic of AI in general, that the limitations of the models today. And those companies do better. Whereas what the big tech firms are trying to do is produce this general purpose assistant that can basically handle any request from anyone, all different types, you know, all around the world. And that is a really difficult task. And then they try and constrain these task-specific requests into apps, which are generally very difficult to discover because there's not a decent app store. And they're difficult to remember when you need them because there's a specific invocation phrase. Sometimes you have to install them and give them permissions, which is more friction. There's, you know, you can't always Integrate them easily with your, I don't know, with the other devices you've got in your home, or buy services from them easily without integrating your payments. So there's all these kind of obstacles. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the fact that it doesn't work half as well in a foreign language, or if you've got a regional accent for whatever reason. So there's a lot of barriers on the technology front, on the integration front, and on the design front as well, that we need to overcome before this thing really becomes as useful as people hoped it did.
I love your point around very kind of niche domain expertise for a particular product. And like, I am thinking about the challenges from an engineering perspective, and you know, even my personal struggles with my Google Home, right? It's like, I'll say, you know, hey, Google, in the family room, like, do this and set the volume to, and it's like, and then I forgot to mention Pandora or Spotify, and it's like, it got all, you know, it doesn't know, like, I like to listen to jazz on Pandora, but you know, playlists on Spotify, right? And it's like, and so you're right, the expectations are insane. But I am thinking about the applications in more narrow niches. There's probably a lot of those. And if you train the jargon, that's is there any particular example of a niche that you're aware of that has a voice product that's kind of doing well in that particular niche?
Yeah. So on my podcast, I've interviewed a number of companies that do well on that. So there's one, for example, I always give is Green Key, which trains these specific models for example, a financial trader room where there's a lot of, you know, very noisy environment. They're talking in financial lingo. And so you can imagine they just use the audio data from that environment. And so they get much better results. They've also branched out to policing. And so, you're on the road, there's environmental noises, there's the radio going, there are specific police terms that are used over and over. So they can just listen for those particular terms and produce a high level of accuracy when it comes to interpreting what the person says and what they want to do, because there's a set number of things they're asking for each day. Another one is Satisfy Labs. So they do one for sports events and theaters. So the same things are asked in sports venues. You can imagine, like, where are the toilets? Where do I buy popcorn? So you can train for those things and then get a decent response. Whereas,
interesting,
you know, if you're asking for anything, like any general purpose question, then that's a much more difficult challenge.
It's an interesting application. Is I've been thinking a lot about this COVID era sports thing, and one of the biggest communities and personas is the NBA. So we spend a lot of time talking about the NBA, and I've been thinking a lot about how they manage crowds in there. And you know, I believe there's a sound engineer kind of on site that is manipulating crowd noise and people cheering and booing and whatever. But I've always thought it would be really interesting, and I'm now kind of applying this lens that you just mentioned to say, like, okay, what if you had hot mics in fans' homes and it was detecting cheering, laughter, booing, and then amplified that, you know, actually in the stadium. You could get a really powerful dynamic and say, like, oh, yeah, everyone's laughing, everyone's booing, everyone's cheering, half the people are cheering, the other half are booing. Like, you could get to really interesting dynamic, sort of quote unquote realistic sound profiles. And I'm realizing your comment about narrowing down the training set, that might be
yeah, I love that. You know, I remember a long time ago when I was living in Beijing, we had the idea of like a robo DJ, which would actually monitor like the crowd and see like how much they love that track, and then like broadcast that analytics to other clubs, which could start playing that track, you know.
Like, right. That's really interesting too. And you could so at my wedding, my DJ was very upset with me because my wife and I way over engineered our playlist. But the playlist strategy was we would hit like an oldies or a song that like everyone danced to, like YMCA, or like we did like a Backstreet, but like we tried to make it accessible, get everyone on the dance floor. And then we slowly transitioned it and sort of to the new popular music. And then we would kind of get back with a classic. And I'm thinking about, you know, robo DJ. It's like, oh man, no one is liking this song. If I played it for 30 seconds, I should probably change the song early.
Down.
And it's like, oh, this one's really bumping. I'm going to do it again, or maybe a remix of it. Let's go.
Exactly.
Well, great. And I appreciate you hopping on the podcast. Remind people what your show's name is and where they can find you.
Yeah, it's voicetechpodcast.com. If you want to sign up for the weekly newsletter, Voice Chops, you can go to voicetechpodcast.com/newsletter. And I encourage everyone to check out Rumble Studio as well. It's just at rumble.studio. It's a chance to record some audio asynchronously. You can download it. You can use it for whatever you want. It could be a podcast. It could be something else. It's rumble.studio and it's currently free. So why not?
Great. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thanks for being on.
Thanks very much, Chaz. Pleasure.